Russell Shorto, Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon. We're talking about Descartes. We're talking about, which could sound like way back when, but we're also talking about right now.
I can clarify that. I think I can. It is the scholastic model, the view that faith and belief, and particularly your religion, is defining. And there are still a lot of people in this country. We're in the middle of a political campaign, you've probably noticed.
As we speak.
And that is a solid piece of what the discussion inevitably revolves around.
Yeah.
And what you've done is to make sense of the condition in which this country finds itself. Partly that group, and but also that moderate group of Enlightenment thinkers.
Say what that trilogy is.
He's qualified. I'm
Mr.
not.
Mr. Shorto.
Okay. You bring up the election, and I think that one reason that people are so interested in this election is that the years of the Bush era have coincided with a rise of fundamentalisms, Muslim fundamentalism, Christian fundamentalism, and I would say secular atheist fundamentalism, which
and Hindu fundamentalism
neocon fundamentalism.
Economic fundamentalism.
But all of which, of course, set themselves up as the right as opposed to the wrong. There's always a dichotomy, a black-white way of looking at things. And one reason I wrote the book was to explore the modern centuries for myself. And as I started to say before, after 9/11, doing my own quest for, I studied philosophy at university, and you have a sort of humanities background, and and to go back and revisit and say, sound these things out for myself. And I found in the actual physical bones of Descartes and the way they were handled and the people who handled them, a nice metaphor for that. And a nice, I don't like to take a standard path. I'm not going to do, the modern era 101. It's going to be something.
Descartes was born in.
Exactly. Although there's some of that you have to.
There was the man who died. But, he did that
right,
for us.
Right. But your point that, so now we're in this era of competing fundamentalisms, which you could say started with that generation where you had this theological worldview that, and suddenly it had something opposed to it. You could say a worldview based on reason. But very quickly what developed was not a two-way, but a sort of three-way split. Joining those was a kind of moderate enlightenment. And here I'm using the categories of Jonathan Israel, who said that you had a radical enlightenment in which the modern thinkers really opposed themselves violently to the old religious perspective. But you also had a moderate enlightenment, which said part of the job of reason is to figure out how to incorporate the irrational within the human sphere, because that is, in fact, part of what we are, whether it's art or faith or what have you. And so over the course of the modern centuries, you see these three forces at play. And the more fundamentalist ones will tend to try to say, no, it's just the two of us and it's a fight to the death. But there is this other as well. And I would say that these years of the Bush era has we've seen such a rise of fundamentalists that you see a lot, that I think a lot of people are yearning for something, for some leader to come forward and say there is, there's another way to do this.
Well, just historically, this was manifested in the French Revolution and the American Revolution, which are very radically different notions of what a revolution is.
Precisely.
And again, this the distinction between the moderate enlightenment and the radical enlightenment matches, certainly by your telling, and it seems to be, from what I know, a legitimate description, that tracks fairly closely with the nature of those revolutions.
Exactly.
And how are they different?
Where the French Revolution was, they're both true revolutions. The French Revolution was a revolution against the state and also against the church. And if you look back 150 years more to the time of Descartes, what the seeds that were planted then, the revolutionaries during the French Revolution saw themselves as the fruits of that. And they saw that what started then with this concentration of understanding on the individual, on, as Descartes said, the mind and its good sense, what it had developed into by the 1780s and 1790s was this awareness, that this conviction that absolute government was wrong, and government based on individual rights is what ought to replace it, and that that the church as having autocratic power was wrong and had to be destroyed. So the French Revolution was they went around destroying churches, murdering priests, and the perfect comparison or contrast is imagine George Washington and his armies roaming up and down the East Coast destroying churches. I mean, it didn't happen because it was just assumed as part of the inheritance of the American Revolution that religion was going to be part of the fabric of society.
You talk about that also in terms of the newness and the oldness. You talk about France having the most autocratic system in all of Europe, both in terms of the grasp that both the state and the church had, and in what would become the United States. Neither of those had the same kind of power for lots of reasons, including geography and being a long way from the motherland. Yeah. So the once again, context really matters here.
Yeah. Then the blank slate of America was,
of course you were a native.
Well, blank slate in the sense that, the European culture developing in a place where they didn't have the constraints, they didn't have, guilds extending into the Middle Ages and so on, allowed it to develop in a very different way.
That's quite Darwinian in a kind of interesting way, isn't it?
It is, but that's one element. It's one template, one way of interpreting the difference.
It also, this country started thinking of itself as a nation in the context of the Enlightenment, which is a radically different Genesis origin myth than certainly any of the nations of Europe, and really most of the nations around the world. That there's this window in time when the full force of the moderate Enlightenment, particularly the English Enlightenment, was trendy. and the thinkers, the people that were designing this country, thinking about what kind of government we should have that would be different from and resolve some of the problems that we had inherited from Great Britain, were working in the context of the Enlightenment.
And that, I was going to say, another template, another way of looking at that difference between France and the U.S., for example, is the American is obviously in the British model and the French in the continental, and the French were known and are known still for their sort of top-down approach and their abstract thinking, and the British approach to the Enlightenment was a kind of tinkerer's approach, like little men in their workshops with the practical, let's solve this puzzle, let's figure out, a new approach to this kind of gear, whereas the French, they had the Academy of Sciences, and they wanted to divide knowledge into different categories, and, both are useful, but I think the British, a lot of the British spirit applied in the American context as well.
We have sort of just assumed everybody knows what the modern is.
People know who Descartes is, so
there. So let's step back a little bit. In this context, how would you characterize the modern era?
Can I do it with Descartes?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Okay. Descartes, if I do the traditional, Descartes was born in 1596.
Yeah, but it happens.
It's okay. The context matters.
Born in 1596, died in 1650, and that lifespan neatly coincides with this period in Europe in which there was this exuberant outburst of exploration of the natural world with grinding lenses and looking in microscopes and telescopes and dissecting corpses and all of which was at odds with the system of knowledge that had been built up over the previous 1,000 years. Which was a blend of, which was mostly Christian teaching, but blended with ideas from Aristotle and other thinkers, and which did its job. It explained a lot of things for people for a long period of time, but in light of this work that was going on, it didn't explain it very well. And at the same time, the work that William Harvey was doing and that Francis Bacon was doing and Galileo didn't have a new a foundation. So what Descartes did in essence was provide a new intellectual foundation for this. And in a phrase, I think therefore I am, cogito ergo sum. In the phrase, that, you know, he famously sits down. The great thing about, one of the very nice things about Descartes as a philosopher is that he was modern in his prose style as well. He often wrote in the first person. It's quite readable.
He wrote in French.
He wrote in French, not in Latin. He describes in the I think, therefore I am exercise. He describes himself sitting in his dressing gown before the fire, and so he sort of welcomes you into the story, and then explains that the knowledge that he had been taught, he just doesn't trust. And so he's going to perform a little exercise. What he's going to do is take each piece of received wisdom and examine it. And if it doesn't seem sound, he's going to set it aside. And he describes this as a test because some of these pieces of received wisdom are things like the bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ, which, you know, if he's, you know, comes out and says this is not...
That's a little dicey.
Yeah, yeah. So this is only a test. So he goes one by one through things and sets everything aside until he comes to one thing that he can't doubt, and that is the fact that he's thinking these thoughts. I think, therefore, there must be this thing that exists that is thinking these thoughts, which is the human mind, and then that, he decides, is the basis on which to build a new kind of knowledge. And that's the beginning of the modern.
And this we'll return in just a moment to see why that is just downright revolutionary with Russell Shorto. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, Mr. Shorto, all three of us invite you to be with us when we return.